Welcome to Hope's Garden and the Bridegroom Speaks podcast with Laura Ercolino.
Into nor would I let him go till I had brought him into my mother's house, into the room of her who conceived me. So the Lord has just completely unpacked those lines for me. And it begins first with taking a look at the word mother. And so I want to kind of give you some different interpretations and images to hold in your mind. And then we will get into what he wants to speak to us today about this idea that once we have found him, once we are clinging to him, we know he is our hope and our healer, the one that our heart has been seeking and the one that our heart needs, that then he wants us to take him into our mother's house. But first, I want to give you some understanding of what this mother's house is and what mother means. So there is a few other verses, some from the song and one in particular from St. John of the Cross's spiritual canticle that I want to read to you. So first, there's this verse. So this is verse 3-4 of the Song of Songs. I held him fast, nor would I let him go, till I had brought him into my mother's house, into the room of her who conceived me. And then verse 8-2. I should lead you. I should take you into my mother's house, and you would teach me. And then 8-5, and this is the bridegroom. I awakened you under the apple tree, there where your mother conceived you, there where she who gave birth to you conceived you. And John of the Cross in his spiritual canticle takes that line from the song, and he writes, beneath the apple tree, there you were betrothed. There I gave thee my hand, and you were redeemed where your mother was corrupted. So first, if we think about the apple tree, so we have the apple tree being the symbol for the tree in the Garden of Eden, the tree from which Adam and Eve ate the apple and became the parents of all the living, the parents of fallen humanity. And so Eve is one of the mothers that we're talking about in this line. And then when we hear at the end of the song from the bridegroom that he awakened us under the apple tree, and John of the Cross says he betrothed us under the apple tree, we're talking about the apple tree now as also being a symbol of Jesus's cross. The marriage bed of the bridegroom is the cross, the new apple tree, where Mary became the mother of the redeemed. And so we have these two mothers to start with. We have Eve, the mother of the fallen, and we have Mary, the new Eve, the mother of the redeemed. And so if we think about this line, he wants us to hold him fast and take him into our mother's house, into the room of her who conceived us. So first we were conceived by Eve, right? In scripture, it says that Eve is the mother of all the living. But when she conceived us in sin. But we need to go back. He wants to take us to that original sin shame that we all carry, to that concupiscence that we all inherit. And he wants us to know that he can heal that in us, that he can set it right, that he has redeemed us, that he is merciful love. And so he knows, again, like we've talked about, Father Blaise says, the bridegroom has no delusions about the weakness of his bride. He knows that our mother is Eve, that we are fallen. He knows our state, our condition, and he loves us. And he says, I still see in you that inherent grace and dignity that I created you with. You are beautiful, wholly beautiful, and without a blemish. And so he wants us first to take him into that fallen humanity, into the shame that we all inherit, so he can heal, cleanse us, purify us, show us our true beauty reflected in his eyes. And he's given us the gift of a new mother, Mary, the mother of the redeemed. And so we want to go into her home. We want to bring her into our home in our hearts. We want her to come on this journey with us. And we want her to be our model of what it looks like for us, how we're meant to be. Her destiny is our destiny. She shows us that original inherent grace and beauty that we were all created with, that God intended for all of us before the fall. She's our model of what restored is, what it is to be restored. So the other spiritual mother symbol of this that I want to talk about before I get into talking about then our actual mothers is that this, the saints and the church fathers and spiritual writers also see in the song that where it talks about mother, that we're talking about the new Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem, the church as our mother. And so in one sense, even though, like Liz said, when she receives the Eucharist, she says, "You're mine now, and I'm going to hold you fast." Well, we can't actually hold him fast until we arrive in our mother's house, until we arrive in the new Jerusalem in heaven at the eternal wedding feast. And then we can hold him fast and never let him go. So again, it's a reminder, you know, when we think about that interpretation of these lines, it's a reminder to keep our gaze focused on what is above, to keep our mind set on reaching the top of this spiraling ascent, that that's our goal, to keep reminding ourselves in the moments of suffering, of exhaustion, that even if we lived 100 years is nothing compared to eternity in the New Jerusalem with the bridegroom. We are journeying towards our mother's house, where then we will be able to hold him fast and he will hold us fast and we will never let go of each other. So when we think also about holding him fast and taking him into our mother's house and these things that we were talking about Eve being the mother of the fallen and Mary being the mother of the redeemed, then I want us also to think about this interpretation of it. That all of us have been wounded somehow by our mothers. And I'm going to use the word mother, even though I know some people, their primary caregiver may have been their father, it may have been an aunt or a grandmother, but I'm just going to use the word mother to mean any early childhood, your primary caregiver. Okay. We know now through neuroscience and psychology how important even the prenatal time is, even the time in the mother's womb, how that begins to have an influence, an effect on the development, on our development, right? And those first 3 years, we hear so much now about attachment parenting and how important those 3 years are, how much brain development is going on and how much we're learning about relationship. That's what we're really learning. That right side of the brain is just growing and growing and growing and learning just from the way our mothers hold us, the way that they gaze at us, about what it means to be in relationship, how safe we are or how unsafe we are in relationship. All of that is imprinted in our brains and in our hearts. And so it carries over then into our relationship with God. It carries over into our relationship with Mother Mary and in our relationship with Jesus. So it goes long back before, you know, we talk a lot about spousal wounds and how the bridegroom heals those spousal wounds in our hearts. Well, it goes back even further, our wounding that creates obstacles to us being in union with Jesus. It goes way back to our very first days. So he wants us to hold him fast and let him come with us back into our mother's house, into those mother wounds in our hearts. Because he knows that as long as those wounds, those weeds are hidden underneath in our hearts, that we're not completely free, that we're not free to give ourselves totally to him, that we don't have space in us to receive all that he wants to give us. Those are obstacles. That's clutter. That's mud that he wants to clean out, always for the purpose of healing and for giving us more of himself, more love, for being more and more in union with him. So if you could think of a picture of your heart, right? And if you think about all the wounds as places that are maybe like hard or filled with sludge, and then the pieces that where you've already done the healing with Jesus, where you've already become detached from different things, and those are now empty and purified and glistening, and he can fill those with himself, right? But those pieces where there's still these wounds that are hard and sludgy, you can't give them freely to him yet. He can't fill them with himself yet. And we want our whole heart to belong to the bridegroom. And so he wants to go back into those old wounds that sometimes, I know me personally, you know, I think, oh, you know, come on. That was so long ago. That can't really affect me now, right? I must be over that by now. I don't want to go back and look at that. And he says, no, it's okay. You're not going alone. Mary and I are going with you. And there will be fruit that once we clean out the weeds, then we can grow beautiful things from there. St. Bernard, you know, he doesn't talk about trauma, but he talks about how just even from the original sin shame that we carry, and then from the things that happen to us in this world and in today's world, we would talk about the traumas that happened to us. And even in early, very early childhood, that is like mud covering our wedding garment. And Jesus wants our wedding garment to be purified, to be pure white, cleansed. And only he can do that. And yes, we need the sacrament of reconciliation, and we need the healing of those wounds, those traumas that flung mud at our wedding gown. And Jesus knows that so much of what we're going to confession for now today are responses, are habits that we've built up over time as we have either tried to cover up those wounds, didn't know how to deal with those wounds. They were responses to the traumas in our lives. And so he knows that if we're going to overcome those habitual sins, those lies that keep coming up and giving us those negative thoughts and making us beat ourselves up, if we're going to overcome all of that and grow in holiness, we have to heal the early traumas. And so this is what he wants us today to hear in these lines: to hold him fast and to take him into our mother's house, into the room of her who conceived us. So if we think about it, the little girl that we were is the mother of who we are today. That as we grow up, we don't leave the past behind us. It makes us who we are. We carry it with us. And so the little girl, the adolescent, the young adult, they're all the mother of who we are today. The woman we are today is made up of all these different ages and stages, all these different events and relationships, all the wounds and hurts, the big capital T traumas and the little T traumas. Don't leave our past behind. We sometimes think we can. We very often would like to. And Jesus says, no, but it's okay, because I make all things new. And I turn ash into beauty. I grow flowers right in those wounds. You don't need to repress it. You don't need to hide from it or hide it from him. He already knows. He knows better than you do why you are who you are today. And he knows who he created you to be. And he knows what needs to be done so that you can become the woman he created you to be before the world and the enemy got a hold of you. It seems really important to me as we talk about all of this to then take to prayer, to take to Mother Mary and ask her to be the mother that you need now and the mother that you needed when you were younger. And to help you to learn how to be a mother to yourself now, to mother the little girl in you, and how to be a mother you need now. I don't think there ever comes a point in our lives when we don't need to be mothered. And it's not a judgment, I'm going to make that clear too. It's not a judgment on anyone's mother, because even our mothers came into the world fallen and experienced trauma and poor parenting, right? So it wasn't of any fault of their own. This is just the state of our fallen human, our human condition. We are all wounded, but we don't have to live from those wounds. We can let him heal them, and we can grow in holiness and become more and more the women he created us to be. I think it's really important too. I know in my own personal journey, part of that taking him in to my mother's house also meant growing in forgiveness, praying for the grace to forgive and to have compassion and understanding for things that happened in my childhood with either of my parents. You know, like I said, we're using the word mother, but it may have been your father. And so forgiveness is a big piece of this journey also. And I think that the more that we understand our own, you know, as we look back at our own past and allow him to come in with his grace and his healing love and heal those wounds, it kind of opens, removes scales from our eyes and opens our eyes as to like, oh, that's why I've always done this way. Or that's why I keep falling into this reaction when someone does that, right? It helps us to be more self-aware. We grow in self-knowledge, but then that also helped me to grow in compassion for others in my life, to see, well, if there's these reasons, it was really from my woundedness. It was really a coping mechanism to not deal with the pain, to not face the hurt in me that I responded so defensively, then it helps me to see the people around me. Oh, well, if I respond that way to pain, maybe that's all they're doing is responding from pain. And maybe I don't need to get so angry or think poorly about them. Maybe I just need to pray for them and rise above the pain and just love them in the midst of whatever this is, that it's really a response to pain and not so much a response to me. And so it really helps to grow in those virtues of compassion too, and loving our enemies, because we begin to see that maybe we don't have as many enemies as we thought. Maybe it's just wounded people who don't yet know the healing love of Jesus. And maybe now that I do, I can help them to experience that through me.
For more resources and our consecration to Christ the Bridegroom, visit hopesgarden.com, the sanctuary where the spousal love of Christ the Bridegroom heals hearts, marriages, and families. You may also want to join our community powered by Mighty Networks. Download the Mighty Networks app and find us at Hope's Garden.